looks like it's doing it.
There it is. I guess now. So does that mean it's working?
Yep.
Okay, good.
All right. Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. Today we are broadcasting high atop Orthodox Tower here at the campus of Concordia Seminary, where only Orthodox Lutherans live, move, and have their being. And we are in the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 2. Apologies to our thousands of listeners who missed Greek Club last week. I was out of town, and I forgot, to be honest, to get a sub, so it's completely my fault. But we are back, and we are in Hebrews chapter 2, and I believe we're picking up at verse 10, which presents some interesting, at least two interesting translational possibilities. So Hebrews chapter 2, verse 10, which in Greek reads something like the following: Eprepengar auto de han tapanta kai de hu tapanta pelusuius es doxan agaganta tan archegan te soterias auton dia path e maton teleosai. So the first verb there is from prepo, so, and it just means to be fitting. And this is just an imperfect. You can see the temporal augment. So it was fitting for him. Excuse me, the dative pronoun there. Now, what was fitting? This little verb normally will take usually an infinitive as its subject, sometimes a henna clause, but that would be more John's style. So and of course, the infinitive is the last word in the sentence. So we have teleosai, to complete. And you can see telos in there, the goal or end and so forth. So the basic sentence would be, to complete was fitting. That would be kind of the basic structure with subject and verb, right? And then you have to fit all the pieces together. So let's clean up the infinitive first of all. To complete, and now normally, if you back up to the end of the second line, we have ton archegon, which is, let's see, archegos is normally translated leader or something like that. Or is this the word, Reed, you probably know, that's normally pioneer?
Yeah, it's Acts 3 and then again in
exactly,
12.
Exactly, the pioneer of their salvation. You know, the Old Testament guys around here make me really sick because they know the Old Testament and the New Testament. And us New Testament guys only know the New Testament because, as we all know, the Old Testament has been fulfilled and it's not important anymore, right? So, okay, I take that back. So, to complete the pioneer of their salvation through sufferings. Okay, so all that goes with the infinitive. So that's what was fitting for him. And now let's talk about the him, and we can go back to the beginning of the verse. On account of whom all things, and you just supply the linking verb, on account of whom are all things. And now we have dia plus the genitive, through whom are all things. So this is probably a reference to God the Father, right? So to complete the pioneer of their salvation through sufferings was fitting for him, through whom are all things, on account of whom are all things and through whom are all things. Now, the only thing we have to deal with now is the participle agagunta, okay? And it's normally parsed, it could be a number of things, but it's normally parsed as masculine singular accusative, okay? Now, you have a natural referent that is right next to it. That would be the archegon, right? The pioneer or the author. And it would be in predicate position, right? It's an aorist participle. And so you could translate it something like this: for it was fitting for him through whom are all things, on account of whom are all things and through whom are all things, to complete the pioneer of their salvation through sufferings, because, we'll just take the participle causally, because he, that is, the pioneer, was leading many sons unto glory. Right? Does that make at least some sense? It's welcome to the letter to the Hebrews, right? Now, interestingly, I checked out Henry Alford's commentary on Hebrews and one or two other ones. I think I might have looked at Westcott as well. They don't want to take it that way because they think it's too strange of an expression that the pioneer, which would be Jesus, has sons. They think that if you take the participles referent as the archegon, then that's just a weird expression, that he leads many sons to glory, because the writer to the Hebrews is about to tell us that we're actually Jesus' brothers, not his sons. Okay. So the problem now is, if archegon is not the referent to the participle, what is? And now this will make you, now Dave, I want you to watch the windows. I don't want anybody diving out the windows here. What they actually suggest is that the referent of the participle is the unexpressed subject of the infinitive, which would be masculine, singular, accusative. Does that make sense? That would be him, God the Father. In other words, and it's interesting, I think as I thought about it, you could probably go either way. I don't think your doctrine is going to be completely messed up. But I did want to mention that just because that's the way some of the big shots actually take this. So in that case, the translation would be, for it was fitting for him to complete the author or pioneer of their salvation through sufferings, while he, that is the Father, was leading many sons unto glory. Something like that. Okay? Well, that was a little difficult. Any questions about anything in verse 10? Again, the Christology of Hebrews is really quite remarkable. It's among the highest and the lowest, if I could say it that way, in the New Testament. You have, you know, in chapter 1, Jesus being the exact representation of God's image. And then you have him being made perfect through suffering. Right? And so if you read all of the evidence, then you come out an Orthodox Lutheran. If you only read some of it, you become like an Arian or an adoptionist or something like that. So we don't want to do that. Okay, verse 11. We'll go forward. Hategar hagiadzon kai hoi hagiadzamenoi ex henos pontes dehain aitean uk epaiskinetai adolfus autus kalein. And then verse 12 begins an Old Testament citation. Okay, the first word in verse 11 looks like a relative pronoun, right? Because it's got rough breathing and an accent. It only has an accent, though, because of the word that follows it, te, which is in clitic. So this is only the article. That's all it is. And it goes, of course, with the participle, hagiadzon, to sanctify. For both the one who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified, out of one all are. And you have to supply a verb. Pontus is nominative. So you could make it, you know, just go with the participle, or you could have it be sort of the predicate nominative. And I think the one there has to be God, the Father. And the one who sanctifies is Jesus. And those who are being sanctified are the believers. For the one who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified are all of one. And then interestingly, the writer says, because of which cause, that's a little awkward. Sometimes you actually get the relative pronoun and the antecedent in the what we would call the wrong order in Greek, but it happens fairly often, and you just kind of plow through it. Because of which cause or reason, uk epaiskinetai, he is not ashamed. Not ashamed to do what? Kalein adolfus autus. To call autus them as brothers. I think that Wallace's grammar would call this The autus adolfus, it's a double accusative after kaleo, and I think he would call it the object complement, double accusative. And so what the writer to the Hebrews is doing here is really emphasizing the link, the connection, the commonality between Jesus, the author of our salvation, and we ourselves. And he's about to do that by talking about partaking of flesh and blood, and or actually, interestingly, blood and flesh and things like that. So, okay, good. Verse 11. Anything on verse 11? Okay, good. Verse 12. And now we get another Old Testament citation, a couple of them in a row. Legon, now from Psalm 21 in the Septuagint. Apan galo to anima su tois adolfoismu en meso ecclesias himnesosa. And we'll just keep going. Kai palin ego esamai pepoithos ep auto. Kai palin idu ego kai ta paidea ha moi edoken ha theas. So citations, as you can see from the side notes, to Psalm 21 and Isaiah 8, verses 17 and 18. So translation is pretty straightforward. Verse 12 saying, I will announce your name to my brothers in the midst of the assembly. Of course, when we see ecclesia, we automatically want to translate church, and that wouldn't necessarily be wrong. In the midst of the assembly, I suppose, would this be kahal? Read maybe in the psalm in Hebrew? Yeah, okay, good. In the midst of the assembly, I will hymn you, I will praise you. And again, I will be confident in him. This is kind of an interesting construction. Esamai is just the future deponent of Emeh. The second principal part of Emeh is deponent. And then pepoithos is from patho. It's actually a perfect participle of all things. And in the perfect stem, patho means to trust or be confident. And so it's actually, what do you call it when you get the linking verb and the participle together? What kind of construction is that called? That's called a periphrastic participle, right? And it's just like a helping verb in English. You just put the am, the to be verb, and then you do the participle. So I will be trusting, I will be confident in him. And again, behold, who will be confident? I and the children which to me God gave. Now, do you remember I mentioned a minute ago that some of these classic commentators on Hebrews didn't want Jesus to be the one who led many sons to glory? But here, I mean, it actually talks about, you know, fellow believers as my children. And so, again, I think the context of Hebrews would allow either translation of that sort of difficult construction back up in verse 10. But, again, this is Septuagintal Greek. It's not too hard, kind of short sentences. And, again, the writer to the Hebrews is operating with a massively typological reading of the Old Testament. I mean, it's thoroughgoingly typological. It's really interesting in that regard, so. I was talking to Dr. Seleska about that a couple of weeks ago. Questions? Any questions about the Greek? Not too bad for a couple of verses. Okay. Fantastic. Verse 14. Epeun ta paidea kekoinoneken haimatas kai sarkas kai autas paraplezios met eschen ton auton. Hina dia tu thanatu kat argese ton takratas echenta tu thanatu. Tut esten ton diabolon. Now that actually, maybe we'll keep going because that's in the middle of a hina clause, and so we'll just keep reading in verse 15. Get our second subjunctive verb there. Kai ap alax. Ap alaxe tutus, hasoi fabu thanatu, diapantas tu zain, anachoi eisan duleas. All right. Epe can mean a number of things, but here it's probably causal. Therefore, and un is post-positive, which is why it's in second, not first place. Therefore, since the children have koinoneoed, have partaken of. That's a great form because it looks just like what it is, which is what stem? Kekoinoneken. Perfect. You got the duplication and the kappa on the end of the stem. So God is good, and sometimes you can parse, right? The direct object of koinoneo is in the genitive, which is why haematos kai sarkos are genitives, so they're the direct object. Therefore, since the children have participated in blood and flesh, I don't know if there's any reason why it says blood and flesh as opposed to flesh and blood. I've never actually looked at that idiom. Also, he himself, likewise, paraplezeos is just an adverb. It means similarly or likewise. And met esken is from met echo. And it's kind of a synonym of koinoneo. Okay. He himself similarly partook of tone autone. Now, by itself, tone autone would translate as anybody? Not just of them. Remember, this is the third person pronoun, and it's in attributive position. The same things. Right. Right. Now, it's interesting that you have a variant reading if you look at the insertion marker, and then if you drop down to verse 14, we have pathematon, which is read in the original hand of D, and then some Latin, some parts of the Latin tradition, right? Pathematon is just the genitive plural of sufferings. If that were read, if you had a tone, auton, pathematon, it would be the same sufferings. But without it, the same things refers to blood and flesh, right? Again, Jesus, the author of our salvation, partook of the same flesh and blood. He is obviously truly, truly God and truly man. And why did he do that? What was his purpose? In order that. Now, the first verb is katargese, which is from katargeo, aorist subjunctive. And it means to nullify or to set at naught or something like that. In order that through death, his own death, he might nullify ton takratas ekanta tu thanatu. The ton governs the ekanta, the one who has. Right? And what does he have? Takratas, third declension. This is accusative singular neuter, and it's the direct object of ekanta. The one who has the might or the power of death. And you're asking, why is of death separated from kratos? And the answer is just because you can do it that way in Greek. We want to keep word order from meaning anything whatsoever, right? So there's a bunch of international people down. Bishop Swaidi is here from South Africa. And I should go ask them if word order means anything in their languages. Because, you know, English speakers are completely dependent on word order, right? Not so much of the rest of the world, I guess. In order that he might nullify the one who has the power of death, this one is, tout estin, the devil. And now here's the second purpose why Jesus partook of the same blood and flesh, that he might up alaxe. Now, alasso means to exchange. And I had to look this one up, actually. It means to, op alasso means to free or release or leave or depart. And so here normally translated free, I think, or release. In order that he might release these ones, tutus. Now, let's say something about tutus with the correlative pronoun husas. Normally translated just who or as many as. As many as Thabu Thanatu. Let's take this dative as Revelation Tower here at Concordia Seminary is being buzzed by the aircraft. In order that, because of the fear of death, or by means of the fear of death, or something like that, as many as, because of the fear of death, through all of the act of living, we finally get the verb eison, were enakos, an adjective that means liable to or subject to. And then finally, what are they subject to? It's in the genitive, douleos, slavery. See? So because of the fear of death, the ones whom Jesus came to free were subject to slavery. Okay? Which brings up an interesting point that apparently in the theology of the writer to the Hebrews, death is bad. I just thought I'd share that with you. Now look at this. This is a little weird. You don't see this all that often in the New Testament. The phrase diapontos tu zein. Zein, what kind of form is that? Anybody want to guess? I heard it muttered twice. It's actually the infinitive of zao, of all things. And it's just acting here like a noun. I mean, just like a plain old noun. And through the act of living, if you could say it that way, or the action of living, and then through all, it's normally translated through all of life. In other words, Forrest Gump's mother, again, it's not right. Death is not just a part of life. Death is the opposite of life, right? And so the writer to the Hebrews is sort of grimly realistic here, right? The fear of death kind of hovers over everything, which is why Christ came to nullify the one who had the power of death, that is the devil, right? It really is a different worldview than kind of the Platonic one where the big goal is to kind of escape off into the never-never land with Tinkerbell and whoever else is up there, you know.
Peter Pan,
exactly right. Now, don't get me wrong. It is true that when you die, your soul goes to be with Christ. It is true. Okay, don't get me wrong. but that's not the big salvation. That's all I'm saying. Right. So, yeah.
In verse 15, how do you translate enoikos, enoikoi, eison? They were subject
to slavery. So to get it to translate, you put the enoikos is nominative because it's kind of a predicate nominative.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And the subject of that verb would be the hosoi, early in the line, right? The pronoun. Okay? Great. Okay? Good. Yeah, so Hebrews is very gutsy and visceral and Lutheran, if I can say it that way. I mean, it's all about blood and flesh and Jesus accomplishing things because he has blood and flesh, right? And of course, most of our theology of the high priestly office of Christ, most of it comes directly from the letter to the Hebrews. Right? Good. Okay, let's take one more verse, verse 16, which is not bad at all. So, Ugar depu angelon epilambanatai. Allah spermatus Abraham epilambanatai. Now, if you're lucky, you just have to look up depu, which is what I looked up, and it means, of course, or surely. For, surely, he is not epilambanomai-ing. It means to help or give aid to, and it takes a genitive object. Okay? So, angelon is the direct object of the first one. For, surely, he is not helping angels. Rather, he is helping the seed of Abraham, right? Which is actually a little note in terms of the Jewishness of the audience, probably, and of the author as well. So, okay, so it was fitting, and that's kind of an interesting thought to begin with, and maybe end there. God does not, in accomplishing our salvation, he does not deny our creatureliness. He embraces it. I mean, it's kind of obvious, but the incarnation actually has immense implications about the goodness of the creation, the goodness of what it means to be a human creature, as Dr. Kolb, would like us to say. And so it was completely fitting for God to save us through blood and flesh, right? Namely, the blood and flesh of Jesus. Right? So it's just absolutely visceral and gutsy, and which is why Lutherans like things like beer and sweat and basketball, right? Which is tonight the All-Stars take on the IM guys. And so come early because I think the whole city of St. Louis will be there. So thank you very much.